Part 1. Star City. Chapter 1. Comet Cowboy. Captain Dimitri Chandler, M-273.04.21-93.106/Mars/Space-ACAD-3005. Or DIM. To his very best friends, was understandably annoyed. The message from Earth had taken 6 hours to reach the space tug Goliath, here beyond the orbit of Neptune. If it had arrived 10 minutes later, he could have answered, "Sorry, can't leave now. We've just started to deploy the sunscreen." The excuse would have been perfectly valid. Wrapping a comet's core in a sheet of reflective film only a few molecules thick, but kilometers on a side, was not the sort of job you could abandon while it was half completed. Still, it would be a good idea to obey this ridiculous request. He was already in disfavor sunwards, through no fault of his own. Collecting ice from the rings of Saturn and nudging it towards Venus and Mercury, where it was really needed, had started back in the 2700s. 3 centuries ago. Captain Chandler had never been able to see any real difference in the before and after images the solar conservers were always producing to support their accusations of celestial vandalism, but the general public, still sensitive to the ecological disasters of previous centuries, had thought otherwise. And the hands-off Saturn vote had passed by a substantial majority. As a result, Chandler was no longer a ring rustler, but a comet cowboy. So here he was, at an appreciable fraction of the distance to Alpha Centauri, rounding up stragglers from the Kuiper Belt. There was certainly enough ice out here to cover Mercury and Venus with oceans kilometers deep, but it might take centuries to extinguish their hell fires and make them suitable for life. The solar conservers, of course, were still protesting against this, though no longer with so much enthusiasm. The millions dead from the tsunami caused by the Pacific asteroid in 2304. How ironic that a land impact would have done much less damage, had reminded all future generations that the human race had too many eggs in one fragile basket. Well, Chandler told himself, it would be 50 years before this particular package reached its destination, so a delay of a week would hardly make much difference. But all the calculations about rotation, center of mass, and thrust vectors would have to be redone and radioed back to Mars for checking. It was a good idea to do your sums carefully before nudging billions of tons of ice along an orbit that might take it within hailing distance of Earth. As they had done so many times before, Captain Chandler's eyes strayed towards the ancient photograph above his desk. It showed a 3-masted steamship, dwarfed by the iceberg that was looming above it, as indeed Goliath was dwarfed at this very moment. How incredible, he had often thought, that only one long lifetime spanned the gulf between this primitive discovery and the ship that had carried the same name to Jupiter. And what would those Antarctic explorers of 1,000 years ago have made of the view from his bridge? They would certainly have been disoriented, for the wall of ice beside which Goliath was floating stretched both upwards and downwards as far as the eye could see. And it was strange-looking ice, wholly lacking the immaculate whites and blues of the frozen polar seas. In fact, it looked dirty, as indeed it was. For only some 90% was water ice. The rest was a witch's brew of carbon and sulfur compounds, most of them stable only at temperatures not far above absolute zero. Thawing them out could produce unpleasant surprises. As one astrochemist had famously remarked, comets have bad breath. "Skipper to all personnel," Chandler announced. "There's been a slight change of program. We've been asked to delay operations to investigate a target that Space Guard radar has picked up." "Any details?" somebody asked when the chorus of groans over the ship's intercom had died away. "Not many, but I gather it's another Millennium Committee project they've forgotten to cancel." More groans. Everyone had become heartily sick of all